Who won the war on drugs? It's hard to say, but it's easier to say who lost. Black, Hispanic, Indigenous, and other people of color have been disproportionately impacted by the drug laws and enforcement practices that have prevailed in the United States for decades. How this came to be and what can be done about it as laws change is the subject of the new book, Waiting to Inhale, Cannabis Legalization and the Fight for Social Justice, by Akwasi Owusu-Bempah and Tahira Rematullah. Akwasi is a professor of sociology at the University of Toronto, and Tahira is an entrepreneur, investor, and prison reform advocate, and they join us now to share five of their big ideas.
My name is Akwasi Owusu-Bempah. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Sociology at the University of Toronto and a senior fellow at Massey College. I also serve as the race equity lead at the Center on Drug Policy Evaluation and hold affiliate scientist status at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. My research generally looks at the intersections of race, crime, and the criminal justice system, an area of work you can't do without focusing on drug policy. Increasingly, my work looks at cannabis legalization and how it may be used as a form of redress for the harms caused by drug prohibition. In addition to my academic work, I also advise and consult with a range of public and private sector organizations, some on the issues related to the topics we discuss in the book.
My name is Tahira Rematullah, and I'm a partner at Highlands Venture Partners, a boutique investment and advisory practice focused on emerging and innovative categories. I'm also co-founder of Commons, a health and wellness products brand, and a member of the board of directors of The Last Prisoner Project, a nonprofit organization dedicated to criminal justice reform. I've been an entrepreneur, a brand builder, investor, and advisor in the cannabis industry since 2014, and am particularly driven by furthering BIPOC and female leadership in this industry and beyond, as well as bringing awareness to the many issues that we face today and need to take action on. As co-authors of Waiting to Inhale, Cannabis Legalization and the Fight for Racial Justice, Akwasi and I are going to share five key insights to give you a flavor of the book. Waiting to Inhale illuminates the stories of those on the front lines of the war on drugs, the individuals and communities disproportionately harmed, sometimes seemingly beyond repair, the official and social forces ranged against them, and the victims, legal and political activists, and cannabis entrepreneurs who are fighting back.
The first insight we want to share is that drug prohibition is the anomaly, not the norm. That is, the illegality of drugs, their illegal status, is a relatively new phenomenon. When we look across the course of human history, for most of that history, drugs were not only legal, but readily available. Now, many of us have come to see drug prohibition, the illegal status of drugs, as something that we take for granted, that drugs are bad, that drug users are bad. And we really want to flip this narrative on its head to recognize that different substances, whether they be psychedelics or drugs like heroin and cocaine, were freely used by people around the world for different purposes, for religious, for spiritual, and for recreational purposes. And drug prohibition, as we know it now, is just about 100 years old. It emerged largely at the beginning of the 20th century as governments in Canada and the United States sought to control not only specific substances, but the people that used them. So in the early 20th century, we saw first largely opium being criminalized, and following opium, cannabis, cocaine, and other drugs. And with that, we saw this new regime that blossomed not only in North America, but the Americans took this fight to the world stage and to the UN, and there we get the UN Convention on Narcotic Drugs. That really spawned the war on drugs, which was declared by Richard Nixon in the 1970s, in 1971. And from that flowed harsher laws against drug use and drug possession, drug trafficking, as well as the expansion of a criminal justice apparatus in order to fight or to wage this war. And from our perspective, this war has had a host of negative consequences. And we're really pleased to see legalization, not only of cannabis, but also of other substances, recognizing again that this historical aberration has been quite damaging. That's not to say that drugs or their use are good, but that the prohibition of drugs brings with it a number of negative consequences that we seek to address.
Insight number two, drug law enforcement is used as a tool of social control. As we discuss in the book, drug prohibition has racist roots. Drug laws were initially developed and later strengthened out of fear of racial minority populations, Asians in the context of opium, Mexican cannabis, and Black populations with cocaine. As we've seen in both the US and Canada, Drug laws and their enforcement can be selectively applied to certain communities or groups, such as minorities or low-income populations, to exert control over them. This contributes to over-policing and the disproportionate incarceration of these groups, resulting in a cycle of poverty and social marginalization. Even though we know that rates of cannabis use are similar across racial groups, we also know that Black and Brown people have been disproportionately arrested and convicted of cannabis crimes. We talk about cannabis as a gateway drug, not necessarily a gateway to harder drug use, as common wisdom would have it, but a gateway into the criminal justice system for society's most marginalized populations. Drug laws can and have been used to justify increased police presence and surveillance in certain neighborhoods or communities, leading to the erosion of civil liberties and the normalization of police intrusion into people's lives. We must also consider the billions of dollars spent on enforcing drug laws. Money spent on police, courts, and corrections in the name of this drug war is money not spent on schools, hospitals, and community centers. We can think of this in terms of transferring wealth and resources going out of marginalized communities and into the hands of criminal justice agencies and the corporations that support and supply them. Drug law enforcement can also be used to demonize certain drugs and groups of users, creating a moral panic and justifying harsh punishment and social stigmatization. This can also contribute to a wider culture of fear and mistrust towards drug users, reinforcing social norms and values around drug use and addiction.
Insight number three, cannabis legalization can be used to repair some of the harms caused by its prohibition and the prohibition of drugs more generally. Now, there are three ways in which this can happen, and I'm going to speak to the first two. With legalization comes a recognition that the substance perhaps should never have been criminalized in the first place, but certainly that its illegal status is not one that benefits society generally, and certainly not the criminalized. And so with legalization, we believe, and as we see happening in many jurisdictions, in the United States, for example, that have legalized cannabis, is a clearing of criminal records for people who've been criminalized for activities that are no longer illegal under the new regime. Now, this has a beneficial impact for those people, of course, but for society more generally. Individuals with a criminal record have a more difficult time completing their education, gaining meaningful employment, often securing housing, traveling, and generally engaging in social life. By clearing criminal records through either pardons or expungement systems, we allow these individuals a greater chance to be able to navigate our society, to participate in our labor force, and ultimately to give back to the countries in which they live. And so we believe that legalization should bring with it a measure of amnesty through expungement and through pardon systems, and that this expungement or these pardons should be granted by the government on its own accord. By doing so, it'll help individuals, it'll help their families, and it'll help the communities and the societies in which they live. We call this clearing the air. A second way in which legalization can be used to repair the harms of the war on drugs is by reinvesting a certain proportion of the tax revenue generated from legal sales back into those communities that have been most harmed by prohibition. And when we look at, for example, arrest or conviction records, we can see very clearly that there are communities, whether they be at the block level or the larger neighborhood level, that were disproportionately targeted by the police for drug law enforcement, and within which a disproportionate number of people have criminal records for drug-related and cannabis-related offenses. Now, we see regimes emerging in the United States. Illinois is a good example of this, where a proportion, in this case, 25% of the cannabis tax revenue generated by the state is put into a fund to which community organizations and groups and other agencies can apply to fund programs that promote public health, well-being, education, and address criminal justice-related issues, for example, crime prevention programs as well as reentry programs. Tahira mentioned already a transfer of wealth that occurred under the war on drugs in which financial and other resources were sucked out of these very communities and used to fund not only the criminal justice system, but the private corporations that support them in their war on drugs. And through this reinvestment, we can begin to reinvest in these communities, repair these communities, and help them be more vibrant, healthy places to live.
Insight number four, the top must include space for those most harmed by the war on drugs. There are several compelling reasons why this should be the case, but we highlight four. Historical injustice. The war on drugs disproportionately impacted marginalized communities that have been unfairly targeted and punished for cannabis-related offenses, leading to mass incarceration and long-lasting consequences. Creating space for those most harmed by the war on drugs to lead and benefit from the cannabis industry is a way to rectify this historical injustice. Number two, economic empowerment. By providing opportunities for those most harmed by prohibition to enter the legal cannabis industry, we can create economic empowerment and generate wealth in communities that have been historically disenfranchised. This can lead to job creation, entrepreneurship, and financial stability. Number three, cultural diversity. The cannabis industry has the potential to benefit from a diverse range of perspectives and experiences. By allowing those most harmed to participate in the industry, we can create a more inclusive and culturally diverse industry that reflects the communities it serves. Number four, responsibility. The legal cannabis industry has a responsibility to acknowledge the harms of prohibition and to work towards redressing them. By making space for those most harmed by cannabis prohibition to lead the industry, we can demonstrate a commitment to social responsibility and equity. This is not only a matter of justice, but also an opportunity to create a more equitable and thriving industry that benefits everyone.
And insight number five, legalization can't and won't end with cannabis. The problems that we've identified with respect to cannabis and its prohibition, as well as the ways in which it can be used to better society, we believe can be extended to other drugs. We're seeing a resurgence of interest in psychedelics as medicines, ibuprofen, LSD, MDMA, ketamine, being used to treat a host of mental health problems from depression to PTSD to anxiety and eating disorders. We also see decriminalization taking hold, not only in North America, but other parts of the world. And we even have calls, for example, coming from Colombia to legalize cocaine. Now, we believe that the lessons that have been learned from this, both the failures as well as the positive elements related to legalization, should be extended to these other substances as the legalization of those substances takes hold. That is, recognizing the harms, seeking to clear the records of people who've been historically criminalized, creating space within these industries, both on the corporate, but also the scientific side. And again, using some of the wealth and the revenues generated from the legalization and ultimately commercialization of these substances to be fed back into the communities that have been most targeted and most harmed by prohibition.
Thank you, Akwasi and Tahira. That was five big ideas from Waiting to Inhale, Cannabis Legalization and the Fight for Social Justice. You might also be interested in our book bite for Drug Use for Grownups by Carl Hart. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.